John DiBella Podcast, 102.9 MGK.
Well, it is finally out, the 50th anniversary deluxe edition of Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young's Deja Vu. The collection, which was curated by Graham Nash, features four CDs, one LP, and includes 38 newly released tracks, features demos, outtakes, everything you could possibly imagine, and Graham Nash is on the phone. Hiya, Graham.
John DiBella, how are you, man?
I am fine. How are you, sir?
Great. I must correct you. This entire thing was put together by Patrick Milligan from Rhino and from my best friend in the world, Joel Bernstein. They took it upon themselves to get all the tapes together and send the four of us all our different tunes for our permission to put them on. And so I want you to make sure that you know that I did not do this myself. It was Patrick Milligan and Joel Bernstein.
Well, that rules out my question of how did you pick some of these songs?
Well, the fact is that I wanted people that really loved that record to try and understand where the four of us were mentally and emotionally when we were making the record. For instance, there's a track on there of Our House where I'm playing, and Joni sat next to me and started playing the same song. It was Our House, which I'd written for her, of course. And I make a mistake, and we burst out laughing. Now, normally, you would never hear that, not normally. But it was such an interesting, intimate moment. And an ordinary moment that I thought it was worth including.
Wasn't that from a soundcheck here in Philadelphia at the Academy of Music?
I believe that's where it was. I would have to check with Joel, you know, to make sure, because he understands. He'll go, no, I took a picture of that night and you were wearing the green shirt. He really is that kind of guy. So I would have to ask Joel, but that was my memory of it, that it was a sound check at the Philadelphia Academy of Music. And obviously I was sitting at the piano making sure it was coming through my speakers correctly. And that's when Joan sat next to me.
Let's talk about the emotions that were going on at that time, because coming off of the Crosby, Stills, and Nash album and going into this, in between the two, you had broken up with Joni, Steve had broken up with Judy, and David's girlfriend, was it Christine?
Yes, Christine was killed in a car crash,
and now you've got to make a new album. The headspace had to be completely different.
It was completely different. We tried our best. We knew we had good songs. We knew that we were decent musicians and decent singers. And but the difference is that first Crosby, Stills, and Nash record was kind of sunny and kind of acoustic and uplifting and gentle. But we were in a different emotional state when we went to do Deja Vu, that's for sure.
Now, the first CSN album, obviously, is three guys. Who decided we need a fourth?
Here's what happened. On that first Crosby, Stills, and Nash record, Stephen Stills played most of the instruments.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, David and I played rhythm guitar, you know, on Guinevere and Lady of the Island and Marrakesh, etc., you know. But it was Stephen that played lead guitar, rhythm guitar, bass guitar, B3 organ, piano, percussion.
Oh, my God.
Right. So that when we got to the end of the record, we realized that we probably had a hit on our hands. And then the next realization was that we would have to go out on the road. But what do you do when one member played most of the instruments? David and Stephen were at a dinner in New York City with Ahmet Erdogan, who is our dear friend and the CEO of Atlantic Records, of course. And in the middle of the dinner that Ahmet was having with David and Stephen, Ahmet said to Stephen, he said, I know who you should get, man.
It's a very good Ahmet.
And Stephen said, okay, Ahmet, who? He said, you should get Neil, man. And Stephen said, what? I just went through 2 years of madness with this guy. He's in the band. He's out of the band. We're doing the Ed Sullivan show. We're not doing the Ed Sullivan show. Are you crazy, Ahmet? And Ahmet said, I'm not crazy. You should get Neil. So then we had a problem, and the problem was this. I knew that Neil Young was a great writer and a great singer. I had never met him. I didn't know whether Neil could be my friend or I could tell a secret to, or, you know, buddy up with him. And I said to David and Stephen, I said, look, I mean, I understand our need here, but I have to meet this guy before we invite him into the band, for God's sake. I said, we just spent, a couple of years creating this wonderful three-part harmony that was completely unique to our three voices. But, four-part harmony is a whole different animal. You know, I have to meet this guy. I had breakfast with Neil on Bleecker Street in Manhattan. And at the end of the breakfast, I would have given him the cafe. He was funny. He was self-deprecating. He was darkly confident, And at the end of the breakfast, I looked at him and I said, Neil, why should we invite you into this band? And he looked at me and he said, you ever heard me and Steven play guitar together, man? And I said, yes, I have. He said, that's why you need me here.
Were there any other people considered?
Yes. Steven and Dallas Taylor, our drummer, went to England and talked to a couple of people. First of all, they wanted to know if Stevie Wynn would be interested mm-hmm. in joining the band. And he was on his own trip right there, quite rightfully so, of course. And he didn't want to do it. So the next person that Steven asked was Jimmy. And there's a famous picture on the box set that me and Joel and Stanley Johnson produced for Steven's box set, of his, his four CDs of past music. And,
Now when you say Jimmy, that could be Hendrix, that could be Page if you're in England. So I'm assuming Hendrix?
Yes.
Okay.
You are assuming correctly. And as I was saying, there was a photograph on Stephen's box set that we put in with Stephen playing Jimmy the chords of Woodstock for him to figure it out.
Now, a fourth player means another opinion and another songwriter. Does it put pressure on everyone to, you got to make the material work with everyone else in the band?
Oh, yes. We used to have a kind of a rule between ourselves, which is that we only work on songs that each one of us likes.
Mm-hmm.
So we all four of us have to like a song before we can actually make good music from the song,
Now, you and I have talked demos on numerous occasions, and there are 18 of them in this set. Some went on other CSNY albums. Some went on to solo records. Do you have a favorite of all of those demos?
I do. And it's my song, Teach Your Children.
Uh-huh.
I had finished it in late 68, and I made a demo of it. And the story is this. I played Stephen the song, and he looked at me and he said, that's a really good song. Don't ever play it like that again. and I said, what? He goes, yeah. No. You sound like Henry VIII. No. This is how this should go. And he put that beautiful Stephen Stills right-hand picking pattern to it and turned it into a big hit. And we'd made the track. It was very simple. It was my acoustic, Stephen's acoustic. Stephen overdubbed a bass part, and Dallas Taylor was on tambourine. Very, very simple. But Stephen said, me and Neil have been playing lead guitar all over this album. I'm a little tired of this. What else can we do? David overheard that conversation. He said, hey, we were in the Wally Hyder studios in San Francisco, and there were four main studios in there. CSNY was in one. The Grateful Dead were in the other studio, and the Jefferson Airplane were in the other studio.
Oh, my God.
So David said, hey, I heard that Garcia's been playing pedal steel for a couple of months. Why don't we give him a shot? I said, okay, this is what you do. Take this two-track mix that we've got of the simple track, play it for Jerry. If he likes it and he wants to do it, fantastic. Jerry had his pedal steel in the Grateful Dead studio, part of Wally Hyder's, and he brought it in, and he loved the song, and he played it, and I got to the end, and I said, that's fantastic. You turned it into a big hit record. He said, yeah, but, I kind of screwed up on a couple of places. Can I do another track? Now, who the hell is going to refuse Jerry Garcia another track? Nobody in their right mind. So I said, absolutely, you can do another track, but I must tell you that I'm totally in love with what you just played when you weren't thinking, when you were just exploring your way through the song. It was perfect to me. So you can do another track, but I'm going to tell you, I'm never going to use it. and I did actually use a couple of notes that were not correct in his first take, but that's the story of Teacher Children.
Now, there are 9 alternate takes on this box set as well. Is there any of those alternate takes that you would have preferred over what the final choice was?
Yeah, there were a couple of things, and this is one of the reasons why the making of the Deja Vu album was so crazy. I would spend hours making a mix of a song. Everybody loved it. Fine, that one's done. Put it on the master reel. Go home, get some sleep. Come back the next morning to start. And the mix was completely different because Stephen had stayed overnight and remixed. and that used to happen constantly. And even to a point where I was in the studio and I actually said to the guys, you know, we're completely blowing this. Why is this so bloody difficult? And I ended up crying in the studio, which was the first time I ever cried tears trying to make a record. Mm-hmm. And it just shows you where we all were. There were a lot of drugs involved. You know, there was a lot of cocaine being snorted and a lot of people staying up for days on end. It was an incredibly chaotic album, and we wanted to make sure that the alternative mixes get shown.
Uncut Magazine had an interview with Stephen, and he has mixed feelings about this reissue, but eventually found it, you know, like, nice to remember that time. Have you spoken to him about it at all?
I have not yet. No, I haven't. I speak to Stephen, you know, every couple of weeks. I speak to Neil, same. You know, we don't talk to David, of course. But, you know, even Stephen's memory is a little weird, you know, because I think in that very article he mentions doing 4 and 20.
Yes, yeah, he does.
And the first take he did, he had a catch in his throat on the words "I embrace," and it was beautifully emotional. And David and I loved that. Stephen, when he got to the end of that take, said, you know, I kind of screwed up there. I want to do it again. And he did it again perfectly. But David and I still loved the one with the slight mistake in mm-hmm. it. But Stephen says that it was him that liked the one with the catch in his throat, and that me and David persuaded him to do another take. I mean, it was just that didn't happen.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
But I must tell you that it was Stephen's idea for the graphics on the cover.
I wanted to ask you about that because supposedly the original cover, eventually it just became a picture. But originally it had depth to it. Supposedly it was one of the most expensive covers that Atlantic ever put out.
Yes, it was. And that cost us a small fortune, actually. Because when you sell, you know, 5 or 6 million, 7 million of these albums, you know, and you're paying, you know, exorbitant prices for the artwork on the cover, we thought it was worth it. It was an expensive decision, but we thought it was worth it.
Stephen, in that same Uncut article, believes he's still paying for it.
Yeah, he could be right. He could be right, and we are indeed checking that out.
I'm curious, is there anything that you would have liked to have seen on here that didn't appear, or do you think that this is as good as it's going to get?
I thought that Neil's decision on what tunes of his were going to go on there was a little harsh. He took a lot of interesting stuff off, and maybe he's saving it for another one of his archive projects. Mm-hmm. But during the Deja Vu album, we began to realize just who Neil Young was. He's a man that's a brilliant musician. He totally clings to the muse of music. When the music is right to him, he puts 125% of work into it. But when it's not right for him, he's out of the door.
Wow. I always find it so amazing that the three of you could actually work with him. Because, like you said, everything about him, he's a great guy, but he is strong in his ways. He sticks to what it is he believes, and trying to move that, you might as well, you know, move the mountain.
Exactly. Because he would take his songs off the album and take them to his studio, or wherever that was, and play around with them and mix them and then bring a track back for us to sing on. Now, that's cool, you know, if that's the way he wants to do it, but that was the way he wanted to do it, and that was against us. And I think I remember the only real time that we were playing for hours and hours and hours was on Helpless. As I said, there was a lot of cocaine being snorted, and we just couldn't slow down enough for Neil. And it took us until about 3 or 4 in the morning before we were exhausted enough to play at the speed that Neil wanted.
I'll just tire them out. We'll get what I want.
That's exactly right.
Well, look, this is an incredible set. Graham Nash, our guest, as I said, the new Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young Deja Vu 50th Anniversary Deluxe Edition is finally here in year 51. It took off for COVID also. But, Graham, thank you so much. Thanks for taking the time. And I hope to speak to you again in the not-too-distant future.
Thank you very much, John. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
The John DiBella Podcast, 102.9 MGK.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.